Craig is usually a fan of water cooler talk, but it's draft season, and that's all anyone wants to talk about. The Athletic has loads of articles about this year's draft, but Greg doesn't have The Athletic, so now he's filling up his water bottle in the bathroom sink, which, to remind you, is the sink people use after they use the bathroom. Get The Athletic and get the info you need to speak draft fluently. Philip has just lost the respect of the youth league football team he coaches. He was asked what New England should do in the draft, and his answer was objectively terrible. The Athletic just wrote a great article about this, but Philip doesn't have The Athletic or the respect of a boisterous group of 11-year-olds who once looked up to him. Learn from Philip's error, get The Athletic, and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
Back on Inside Black and Gold. One more segment. I'm Jeff Nowak. He's Steve Gell. If you haven't subscribed yet, please do that. Please hit the subscribe button wherever you listen to your podcast. Please or give a like, whatever it is. Rate, review, subscribe, all that good stuff. And this interview is 10 minutes long. This is Drew Brees. I am not part of it. It is actually Steve and Bobby from Sports Talk. I'm just going to go right into it. For fair warning, if you are subscribed on YouTube, we did post this interview on YouTube. It's about 10 minutes long, so if you'd rather just skip, if you've heard it already and listen to our takes on it at the end, scrub about 10 minutes forward and you'll be there. But without further ado, here is that interview with the GOAT himself, Sir Drew, Mr. Brees. There you go.
Now, Drew, damn, it's the easiest schedule they ever had in history. It's like, oh, my God, how can you not win double digits? I know things change and who you play and you look at the quarterback matchups, but I look at how can you not hold the organization's feet to the fire, that being Dennis Allen. Look, I'm a Dennis Allen, Mickey Loomis fan. But I look right now that the team's right on the 500 bubble. I'll say for like 8-9, 9-8. Hell yeah, we should be double digits. We cannot afford to have the third consecutive losing campaign. Now, I don't know if you're going to win anything, but you should be in the hunt potentially to win the NFC South and have double digit wins for sure, considering that we're at right now with Derek Carr at the helm.
I've never seen him this excited over a schedule, Drew.
Yeah, I see that. I feel it. You know, it's funny. There are plenty of times where I looked at the schedule and was like, man, this is going to be the toughest schedule we've ever played. Like, look, we got to go here. We got to go there this time of year, that time of year, whatever. At the end of the day, you really don't know. You really don't know what you're going to encounter, you know, from week to week with these teams. You know, on paper right now, some of them may look really, really good. Some of them may look really bad. You really don't know until you get to that point.
Right.
There's so many variables and circumstances that go into that, right? Not just them, but how you are as a team, right? How you're coming together. If you have some key injuries and you're just having to battle it out for a few weeks with some guys that are less proven. Look, at the end of the day, like, look at the division, you know? Should we win the division?
Yeah. Hell yeah.
Win the division. But Atlanta will be better than they were last year. Carolina will be better than they were last year. Tampa, I don't know. Maybe not. Bottom line is this. You know, if you look at last year, we should have won the division last year.
I agree.
If we beat Tampa in Tampa on Monday night, would your impression of where the team sits be different had we won the division last year?
That's true.
Right? I think everybody would have maybe a little bit different feeling, a sense of urgency, but you know, you start feeling like, man, we really gotta do something here, right? It's been two seasons now without going to the playoffs, when obviously that's the expectation that we've established. But we were one game away, not even one game, we're like two plays away.
Right.
In that game. There's about five things that if just one of them didn't happen at the end of that game, we win the division, right? We're right there. I mean, bottom line is we're right there. We have all the pieces in place. I mean, offensively, golly. Like, I look at the skill position and just we've got a lot of mouths to feed. But, man, we've got guys that if we can – everyone understands and embraces their role – I think Derek Carr is a great fit for the system. I think defensively, we're still there. You know, I mean, you'd say the two captains of the defense, Cam Jordan and DeMario, are in a position with some young talent now around them that we've gone out and drafted over the last 2 years. You got to make sure that we can hold up front. You know, you lose a couple interior D linemen, but you go and draft a couple. You know, hopefully those guys jump right into a position where they're key contributors and everybody can stay healthy. I mean, look, yeah, sky's the limit. You know, you just want to take one step at a time. But I don't think you worry so much about who you're playing or the rest of the division or any of that other stuff, though, Bobby. You just focus on, honestly, the best teams that I was a part of here.
On yourself, right?
Were teams that just, honestly, the off seasons, the training camps, you just battled. Iron sharpens iron. Like, you woke up every day trying to kick the other side's ass.
Amen.
Like you woke up and it was like, I couldn't even look at Jonathan Vilma in the locker room because I was like, I got to kick that guy's ass today.
Like
you know,
that.
All those guys, Roman, Malcolm, like all those guys, you know?
Amen.
And so for a month, you were just at each other's throats. And then once you got to the season, like you were so tired of beating up on each other that you couldn't wait for the season to start. And then you looked at everybody else and you said, there's no way that who we're about to play this Sunday is better than what we've been going up against every day in practice for the last month. And it just made the season that much easier.
Now, Drew, but the question I should say that I have for you, we can't be snake bit again as far as can we take away the football or protect it? Drew, I bet you didn't know this, and I'm going to tell you this. Do you know that the Saints are coming off their worst team ever, the worst season ever in Saints history for takeaways? And only 14 forced turnovers and 7 interceptions that were both franchise lows. Considering as good as our secondary was, that's 2 franchise lows. Well, you know this. Okay, let's say we've played a handful of games. Can we be +4 instead of -4 or something? I mean, you know how much difference that makes.
Yeah. Look, and there's a lot of things that go into that. But you talk about, man, ways to help the offense, right, and play complementary ball. You know, that goes a long way. On the flip side, the better the offense is, the more points you're scoring, the more pressure you put on the opposing offense
right.
to have to be more aggressive. Well, what happens when they get more aggressive? That's when the defense can be opportunistic. So all these things play hand in hand, right? And it's not that one equals the other, and it's a combination of all these things. Man, the better the offense plays, I guarantee you, the more turnovers the defense will get. And the more turnovers the defense gets, the more points the offense will get because of the more opportunities and the more momentum shifts, right? These things work hand in hand. Both sides have their responsibility in that.
Have you got a chance at all to talk to Saints rookie Jake Haener after he got drafted by the team in the 4th round? Huge fan of yours, wore the number 9 in college, and just seems to have that same kind of moxie, that attitude and that makeup.
Well, he's a poor man's Drew Brees waiting to accomplish great things. That's what I think.
Yeah, I had a chance to be around him this offseason, and he communicated a little bit of how he followed me growing up, but not to the extent of what's come out since the draft. So obviously that's humbling. I think it's a great pickup for the Saints. I think he brings a lot, and look, you hope that Derek Carr can stay healthy and everything goes great, but as we know in the NFL, you need a very, very capable backup, kind of stable of guys that can step in and get the job done if they need to, certainly Taysom Hill is always ready, willing, and able in whatever capacity, the team needs him. But yeah, that's always exciting to get guys like that, to hear stories like that and feel like, you've made that type of impact on a young player, a young QB.
Now, Drew, you bring up Taysom Hill. I said there should be a category for him, I don't know, in the Pro Football Hall of Fame. Not a regionalized Hall of Fame, but, I mean, it's about jack of all trades, Swiss Army knife. I mean, have you ever witnessed a quarterback that can run past you or run over you and then is capable to do some play-action passes and then also block a punt or return a kickoff? I mean, he's like the modern-day version of Jim Thorpe. I mean, can you name another NFL player that's playing in the 21st century or even before that who's on the Taysom Hill level?
I've never seen a player like Taysom Hill, ever. Maybe there was a throwback guy right. in the 1930s, 40s, 50s right. that we're not thinking about, Otto Graham or so, I don't know. But I don't think we've ever witnessed anything like this before. A guy who could, if someone decided to build an offense around him, he could play quarterback in the NFL. Okay? Look, that job is hard enough, right? But now couple that with the fact that He's returned punts. He's returned kickoffs. He's blocked punts. He's blocked extra points. He can block the point of attack in the run game. He can pass protect. He catches touchdowns. You know, he can run the football as well as just about any running back you have. I mean, so it's not just one or the other. It's the combination of all these things. If all of a sudden you were down an offensive lineman and you said, Taysom, would you just play guard for like three plays and just like hold up against this stud inside?
Right, right.
I bet you he could do it.
Right.
He'd certainly stick his nose in there and try. So yeah, I mean, I've never seen anything like the guy, and he's as good a teammate as I've ever had too. You know, which makes it even better.
Drew, definitely appreciate the time. Please tell us more about the Pickleball Fest that is headed our way to NOLA, and any message out to all those sports and pickleball fans here in New Orleans.
Absolutely. Pickleballers everywhere. New Orleans, nationwide, sign up. We'd love to have you. Again, the dates are August 10th through the 13th in New Orleans at the Convention Center. Be tons of events in and around the amateur pickleball tournament itself. There'll be pros. There'll be celebs. So celebrity pro-ams, we're going to have food, concert, music, you name it. It'll be a ton of fun. And you can go to drewbrees.com, which is our foundation website, because all the proceeds go to our foundation. And you can click on the link there to register. Also, sponsorship opportunities. If you want your company to be involved, we're going to have a whole VIP experience aspect alongside this, a huge hospitality aspect in true New Orleans fashion. So the NOLA Pickle Fest is what we're calling it. So the first annual New Orleans Pickleball Fest, August 10th through 13th, drewbrees.com.
All right, and there it is. Thanks, everyone. Thanks, Drew, for coming on the Sports Talk last week. I thought it was a really good interview. There is a little bit more to that. If you'd like to hear the whole interview, you can go check it out on WWL.
For all you pickleball fans.
Big pickleball fans. He's bringing a pickleball fest. Pickleball.
We're going to have to try and get some kind of WWL team together and see if Drew will play us.
Well, I've been, you know, this is not about the football at all, but I've been seeing like news stories about how people who own houses near pickleball courts are like going insane because the noise is, so obnoxious. It's like, cause it's like tennis. It's like, you have a tennis ball hitting a tennis racket. It's not really noise, but it'd be like living next to a giant ping pong table.
Yes.
With people playing all the time. And I can see why it'd be annoying because that noise, like you can kind of hear it in your head. It's just like, thunk.
I get annoyed when we're in the locker room and I hear it on my audio when I'm editing stuff.
Like ping pong?
Oh, yeah, because they're always in there doing that.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I don't think they've had a ping pong table in there for a while.
Yeah, now it's just the basketball going on.
Yeah.
But yeah, you definitely that. And it basically is a big wiffle ball you're hitting around. And it's funny you mentioned that. I saw that same thing there's residential folks are getting aggravated with the noise from pickleball.
Because it's not loud, but it's loud enough and it's repetitive.
And constant, right.
It'd be like if someone was constantly playing wiffle ball next to your house, but all they were doing was constantly hitting 100 wiffle balls back to back. Yeah. Anyway, so no, I thought Drew had a lot of interesting things to say in that interview. One of them, as mentioned previously, we already know that Drew Brees really likes Taysom Hill. But when you say something like, I have never seen a player like Taysom Hill ever, I think that's pretty telling. And like I still get asked, like, why does Taysom Hill have a spot on this roster? What does he do? And the answer is everything that nobody else wants. I don't know how else to describe it.
Obviously, you know, the Cajun Cannon has nothing but love for Taysom too. And I think that the best way to describe him, we've heard it all along, is just saying he's a football player. There's no position with him. And I'm just curious to know how much more in the receiving game can we see of him. We know he's got that power running ability and always gets that extra yardage kind of deal. But I would just love to see the man utilize more in the receiving game. That's one aspect where I don't feel we see enough of him. But I mean, last year, I think pretty much you called it with Taysom and his usage in this team. And even we're smart enough to take him in fantasy football at the tight end spot.
Yeah. I mean, he's a running back, right? Like he's just a running back who runs the Wildcat. But if you can start him at tight end, he's worth having. If you have to start him at quarterback, absolutely not. But this quote from Drew says, if all of a sudden you were down an offensive lineman and you just said, Taysom, would you just play guard for like three plays and just hold up against the studded side? I bet you could do it. He'd certainly stick his nose in there and try. And it's like, yeah, that's the beauty of Taysom Hill. Like, there's this fantasy football idiot who just every now and then will show up in my mentions. And I'd like, I swear I muted him, but he keeps showing up. And he's like, oh, he doesn't do anything that's worthwhile. And I was like, he literally plays special teams. If anyone on your special teams group is also a contributor in any facet of the game, then they are worth keeping around. And the fact that he not only plays every special teams unit, he also comes in and does something on offense that no one else can replicate. It's such a strange conversation because it's like, of course you want that guy on your roster. Like, yes, it's kind of gimmicky, but sure, that's because there's only one of him in the NFL. It's going to be gimmicky because you have to figure it out, but it's like, it's worth having.
Do we have a Taysom one of one fan out there at all? No.
I mean, I think that's every BYU Cougar.
I mean, yeah,
basically the entire like city of Provo.
With Hill, to me, it also said a lot when Breeze was still around. He didn't mind at all. He actually was in favor of Hill getting more snaps while at quarterback, which is amazing to hear from a competitor like Drew.
Yeah, and I think that's going to be a really interesting thing to watch develop with over the course of the season, because last year, one of the benefits of going with Andy is you had no qualms about taking him off the field at any point. And it was kind of the beauty and the madness of Andy all in the same kind of, you know, picture of like, okay, yeah, his ceiling is so low that there's no question, but like you would have never taken Drew off the field as often as you took Andy off the field last year. Can you do the same thing with Derek Carr? How much can you do that with Derek Carr before he starts to get really annoyed that, okay, so I just have two downs? Like, I go out there and I complete a six-yard pass on first down. Suddenly, I come back on third down and it's third and six because our you know, great Taysom Hill power run lost us 2 yards, right? Like, I didn't get that chance on second down, and now we're, you know, we're in third and long, right? And it's like, that would annoy me as a quarterback over time. If it works, you know, everyone kind of feels happy about it. Winning cures everything. But yeah, I do think that it's like he can say all the right things. I don't know that it's going to work the same way for him. And I think it's going to make so halfway through the season, we're like, why aren't we seeing Taysom more? Well, it's like, well, you paid this quarterback. This is your starting quarterback now. And I think you're going to kind of revert back to what it was with Drew, which is like Taysom getting 10 touches on offense in a game, not catches, but like carries, which is the majority of it last year, is going to be a lot rarer than it was this past season, would be my guess.
An even bigger question, will we see Derek Carr lined up at all at wide receiver?
I mean, he will be. Just the real question is whether he actually runs a route.
We never got to see that from Drew, sadly.
I highly doubt it. Well, they told Taysom he was not allowed to throw to Drew under any circumstances. Which, yeah. But one time he did fake to him, and the defense bought it. It was against the Bucks. Anyway. So there's one other comment from Drew that I do want to draw attention to in it. And I think it's actually a really good point of the turnover thing last year. Like, you can look at the defense and say, why isn't the defense forcing turnovers? And there is an element of luck. There's an element of randomness to it. But what Drew pointed out, which I think is very, very accurate, is the offense has a role to play here too, right? Like, if the offense is not forcing the opposing offense to do anything out of its comfort zone because they're not putting up points, then yeah, it's going to be harder to turn teams over, right? Like, if they're not having to do seven-step drops and try to force the ball down the field on third and long, you're not going to have as many opportunities for turnovers, right? Like, yeah, you can punch the ball out and that happens. It didn't happen for the Saints last year, but in a lot of instances, why is that running back fighting for extra yards where you can punch the ball out? It's because they're desperate to get across the goal line like Alvin Kamara was against the 49ers, right? Like, if the Saints are up 10 in that game, he's not trying to fight his way into the end zone, and that turnover doesn't happen, right? And I think the Saints definitely did not put opposing teams in positions where they had to get aggressive and make mistakes. And it's in part because the offense didn't put up points the way that you'd be grown accustomed to it. Like, I can't, like, there were a couple games that stand out where you're like, yeah, the Saints offense really took control of this game, the Rams game, the Raiders game. But even then, they were not blowouts where the other team had to just completely just say, okay, we're going for it, right? Like, even that Rams game was pretty close. The Raiders game should have been a much bigger blowout than it was. The only reason it was a blowout in the end is because the Raiders didn't score. But it was a 20-0 or something like that, and it should have been worse. I think that's a big part of it. And, like, you can put it on the defense, but the offense has to play complementary football. Like, you know when it's really easy to force a team to make a mistake is when you pin them back to their own goal line, right? That didn't happen that much last year. I don't know. Like, I think that it's a really good point. And when you look back at that season in 2022, one of the biggest struggles was you never felt like the Saints had the better offense in a game. Never. At no point. Even in games they won, I didn't feel like they had the better offense.
No, and I remember thinking that Seattle game, I thought they were going to cruise all over them. And then I remember thinking, holy crap, Geno Smith looks totally different.
But they allowed 42 points in that game?
I was like, what?
Yeah. I mean, Taysom Hill won that game. Like, right, you point to right. The games that the quarterback won, other than, so week one, you give it to Jameis. Week five, you give it to Taysom.
Right.
What are the games that the quarterback win that season? It wasn't against the Browns. The quarterback didn't win that game. Taysom Hill won that game. The weather won that game. It wasn't in week 17. Marshawn Lattimore won that game. Right. And Gardner Minshew won that game, right?
Was it the Rams game? I guess Andy had a good game that game, right?
Yeah, but I mean, you also were playing against the backup quarterback for the second half, right?
Yeah, like, totally, right.
Like, the defense won against the Raiders. So like, there was, like, in no games that, but you could point to games that the quarterback lost, right? So it's just, like, the quarterback position last year was a net negative.
Yeah.
And it needs to be at least neutral. And if you want to be a playoff contender, like, net positive. And I think if that is the case, the turnovers will come. You will get back to kind of, I think it will regress to the mean, but... I just think it's a good point. Like, you can look at the defense and say the defense is doing something wrong. In reality, I think it's a combination of a lot of different things. One of them being lackluster offense, not putting any pressure on opposing offenses.
And of course, we saw that, you know, if it was something was going to go wrong last season, it definitely did for this team. And I think the turnovers was another one as far as even getting the takeaways. A ball gets knocked out, the other team's able to fall on top of it. Or even like a tip ball miraculously falls down where nobody else is on the field for the Saints. They just had terrible luck all around kind of deal.
See, I don't even know if that happened that often, to be completely honest. Like, I don't recall a ton of instances where it's just like, man, that should have been a turnover. Like, you weren't even getting those. The one really good example is against the 49ers where Tyrann Mathieu gets his whole palm on a ball. And ends up tipping it up, and then it ends up falling into Jawan Jennings' arms for a touchdown for the 49ers. Like, that's a good example of, like, man, this is just – or, like, Alante Taylor getting, like, back-to-back interceptions overturned on reviews.
Right.
One of them was a really, really soft penalty on Chris Harris.
To me, the whole turnover issue, there was – it just – a lot went into the snake bit, quote-unquote – whole feel of last season too.
Wait, you know what's funny? It's like we talk about in the preseason, like Paulson Adebo is constantly getting his hand on balls, but he's never picking them off. And it's like, you know, that's kind of a weird thing to complain about when it's like, yeah, but he's knocking the ball down. That's a good thing, right? Like, that should be priority number one. And then the turnovers come. The problem is the turnovers never came. And it, like, that's what changes games. And I don't know, like, I do think that Alante Taylor has better ball skills. And I think if there is one focal point of that position battle that I think, like, will tilt, whether it's Alante or Paulson, it's going to be Alante just kind of having a nose for interceptions and setting them up and picking them off in ways that Paulson just doesn't seem to handle. And, like, either way, they're both going to be very important players on this roster. So it's not really like one wins and one loses, right? I do think whoever loses that ends up playing the slot, because you kind of need somebody to play the slot and you want to get them on the ball, both on the field.
I mean, if you, obviously people don't remember, we didn't have Marshawn for most of the year, unfortunately. And Alante got that, you know, birth by fire, trial by fly fire whatever you want to say right there. And for the most part, you know, obviously rookie's going to have his struggles, but I thought, you know, solid year all season and really did outperform Paulson, who was dealing with, was it knee or ankle himself?
I can't remember exactly what he was dealing with, but he did have an injury in the preseason that I think did make it a little more difficult for him to kind of ramp it. Because it's year two for him. It wasn't like he was coming into like year four where he's like set on everything. He wasn't even like a sure starter in his rookie season. He ended up playing all 17 games. He was one of the, I think he was the only player to play all 17 games, and that was a COVID year. Like he didn't even get hit the week that everyone got hit in against the Dolphins. So yeah, I mean, like maybe that just did not, the season didn't translate the way you'd want it. I don't think he was bad. He has a tendency over his first two seasons to be very solid and then completely break down in the worst possible moments, right? If you go back to that Falcons game the Saints lost in the Superdome two seasons ago, he was the one guarding Cordarrelle Patterson on that last play where you thought the Saints had won and all of a sudden the Falcons are kicking a field goal to go win that game. Like, he's the one who was guarding Cordarrelle Patterson. Should your rookie have even been on the field at that point? Probably not. But the fact is, he let it up, right? He was the guy guarding Mike Evans on that pass interference at the goal line where it's like, why was he one-on-one with Mike Evans? I don't know, but he still did not get the job done. And those plays can't happen. Those plays change a game. I think he's always been a little handsier than you want him to be. And that's just a young defensive back thing. You get away with stuff in college that you don't get away with in the NFL. So I don't know. Maybe he'll show up and he'll be a much more well-rounded cornerback this time than he was last year. But I think that just the kind of swagger that Alante plays with is going to be tough to beat in that position battle, I think.
You mentioned with Adebo too, and obviously he was like training camp superstar last season. And you got to wonder, was it because he's so handsy and was able to get away with it without the refs around kind of thing?
It's definitely part of it, right? Like, you get away with stuff in camp that you're not going to get away with in the game. It's a factor, right? Like, yeah, you look really good in camp when no one's calling the jersey tugs. And then all of a sudden they get called. You're like, well, I can't do that. So how do I hold up now? So yeah, I think that's part of it. Another part of it is just like understanding leverage and how to set up like certain plays and how to set up interceptions. And some players are really good at it. Some players aren't. CJ was always really good at that. Now, was CJ the best in coverage? No, he wasn't. But he was physical and he could set up interceptions. Like, if you go back to that game against the Bucks 2 years ago where he just set up Scotty Miller, like just baited him and then just like hit the Jets and just boom, just clean interception. I think that was the play before Tom smashed a tablet. Like that you just didn't have that last year. And you need someone who's going to be doing that. Like, you need a ball hawk. Didn't have one.
Yeah, somebody definitely needs to step up and start taking that ball away. I mean, we had what's his name? The guy from Kansas City ended up getting two picks.
Daniel Sorensen. Well, I've been tooting the Tyrann Mathieu wasn't that bad last year horn since before it was cool. And, you know, I had someone be like, oh, yeah, we just need to intercept the ball more. I'm like, he had three interceptions. He's led the team.
Yeah.
Like, three interceptions in a season for a safety is a reasonable amount of interceptions. Like, he did not underperform.
There's at least two I think he dropped, too, so.
Sure, but, like, he also intercepted three passes.
Right, no, I'm saying he could even have more kind of deal.
Yeah, and so he had five in 2015. He had four in 2019. He had six in 2020. He's had three each of the past two seasons. So, I mean, three is a reasonable number. It's not zero, right? Like, the problem is how many people had zero or one. You know, like, if four or five players had multiple interceptions, suddenly that's a reasonable number of turnovers, but you can't expect it all from one guy. And they just got it from nobody. Nobody. Except for Daniel Sorensen. And that one that bounced into Bradley Roby's arms.
And then the one that Marshawn got, that was at the end of the year against Philly. I mean, unfortunately, we just didn't see him all of last year.
Yeah, I think, honestly, it's like we can talk about interceptions too. I think the forced fumbles is the real part of the equation that was like, that should happen. Like, just from luck alone, like, you might play quarterbacks and they don't put the ball in danger, but like, geez, guys, punch the ball. Are you just not doing the drills right? Like, what's going on? That you can't punch these balls out. You can watch, like, the Peanut Tillman punch constantly, and it's like, why don't the Saints ever do that?
That's why I felt like the bad luck happened. I remember DeMario, Pete Werner, Caden Ellis knocking the ball out, and then it seemed like the other team was like, oh, they happen to be right there and fall on it.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know. But all right, let's wrap up this episode. We're going to get ready to go out to OTAs tomorrow. I think we'll have another episode posting on Thursday. We'll gather all the sound from Tuesday and then record on Wednesday, and you guys will get it on Thursday morning. It's going to be fun. I'm looking forward to it. I've been trying to go for runs at like the hottest part of the day to like train myself. It's like I call it the Ogeron. That's what he used to do.
Hey,
that's
man, only training the body can get you ready for training camp, and those brutal conditions can't be a bad thing. I'll just have my wet towel over my head.
Yeah, I need to go get. I always go buy a new wet towel. I don't think I'm going to do that for the one day of practice, but it's like you're just kind of ramping up. So sweat maintenance. But all right, thanks everyone for listening. Thanks to Drew and Dr. David Chow, that's Drew Brees, for chatting with us over the last couple of weeks. So we give you that. And hit me up on Twitter, @Jeff_Nowak. Let me know if you're looking to hear from anyone specifically at OTAs over the next several weeks. Doesn't have to be tomorrow. We have 3 weeks of these practices. Hit Steve Geller up, @SteveGellerWWL. You can listen to him on Sports Talk Monday through Friday now, starting at 5:30 to 8 p.m. It's good stuff. Where we got the Drew Brees interview.
Yeah, yeah. And, there's no more breaks where we're getting interrupted by any coaches' shows or baseball games.
Not for a little while. But all right. Thanks for listening, y'all. Peace.
Talk to you soon, Houdettes.